Of course, outside Lockerbie, relatives protesting against his appearance, and for people like Kathleen Flynn, who lost her son PJ in the bombing, he just shouldn't be here.
You see this picture? This tells the whole story. This is a young man, 21 years of age, who was murdered on a flight because Colonel Gaddafi decided to blow up an American plane. That tells the story of Pan Am 103 and why we're here and why we'll continue our fight.
You think that's a widespread feeling in the United States, Corky Samasco, that Gaddafi shouldn't be allowed in the country?
Well, he's kind of a cartoonish figure to most Americans. I mean, you know, the flake of Araby and all that. I mean, I think most Americans, when they see Gaddafi, they can't quite understand how anybody can take him seriously. But the fact is that a lot of people do. He's lampooned here by a lot of politicians and a lot of comedians, and as a result, his public image is what it is.
Lampooned, but he's also tolerated, and arguably he is being, well, maybe not celebrated, but he's certainly being given a prominent position at the United Nations, addressing it straight after President Obama. Libya has the presidency of the General Assembly. Colonel Gaddafi took his seat on the Security Council that he described as the Council of Terror in this, the 40th year of his reign in Libyan politics, 40 years after the coup that first brought him to power. Why are Western powers so determined to have Gaddafi inside the big diplomatic tent, Professor Weiss?
Well, I'm not sure that your audience remembers Lyndon Johnson's quote, but about having someone in the tent pissing out rather than on the outside urinating inwards, and that's more or less the thought here. What I don't understand in this circus that we're presently in is that Gaddafi had gone a long way toward making it back into the mainstream by paying the reparations, thereby at least implicitly admitting guilt, and by foregoing nuclear weapons, one of the few states anywhere to have done so. So until recently, until he sort of went off the rails recently, some of us were laboring under the impression that perhaps he wanted to be a sensible head of state once again, as opposed to the cartoon character. So we have him back in the Security Council. The diplomat who heads up the General Assembly is also Libyan. So we're going to have some headlines for at least the next couple of years.
Yeah, it looks like he's going to make the most of the opportunity that this presents. But his rehabilitation is explained by Britain and America as bringing him in from the cold, creating a new ally against those who would seek to harm us through terrorism. But it's the bottom line here that we want access to his oil, Alessandro Bruno.
Well, absolutely. It's a major one, but not the only one. I mean, Libyan oil is the cleanest in the world. It's easy to extract, and it doesn't need complicated refineries because it's sulfur-free. It's located in a very safe region. It goes directly from the Mediterranean out, no war zones, unlike the oil in the Persian Gulf. So it's very appetizing. Many American companies lost business when Gaddafi came to power in 1969. But most of all, I think Gaddafi's real problem is he was the Bin Laden of the 1980s. He was the Mad Dog of the Middle East, as Reagan called him. So he has a big image to shake off. And whereas his speeches address an audience and are theatrical, in real terms, he knows what he's doing. He's lasted for 40 years in a very difficult situation, and he knows exactly what he's doing. His son is more the face of sanity these days, but the one who addresses the West. He addresses the South.
Well, if he's no longer sponsoring terrorism, it seems he's sponsoring students fairly generously, many of them turning out on the streets of New York to welcome him. And those like Alameen Suleiman, who's a Libyan studying business administration in the United States, say that their leader has changed.
If you look around you, you see a lot of these things. They are welcoming for him. People in my country, they love Gaddafi. And everybody here, they love Gaddafi. We love Gaddafi! We love Gaddafi! We love our leader!
So I suppose to demonstrate that not everybody is against Gaddafi, I want to just finish up by reflecting on these weeks and where it leaves Scotland and the devolved Scottish government. There's much talk that this is a defining decision for the Scottish administration, the biggest decision that's been taken by the devolved government in the 10 years since the creation of the Scottish Parliament. I know Scottish politics isn't your specialism, Tom Weiss, but a defining decision?
What I can't understand as an analyst is why such a decision was handed down. One has to assume, being a bit of a cynic, that there had to have been some commercial interest that benefited from this, because there is no other reason that such a decision would have been made. Why, we ask?
Put Scotland on the map certainly drew attention to the fact that there is a devolved Scottish government, Dougal Munro. Might that turn out to be a good thing?
At the end of the day, this is all about long-term reconciliation. It's not about forgiveness, because there certainly should be no forgiveness, and there certainly should be a strong hand against terrorism in the world. But globally, we have to get along with each other. We need to look at it 25 years from now, as opposed to today, because what we see today is probably going to be largely irrelevant at that point, but it will contribute to how well we all get on in the future.
Good advert for Scottish compassion, Alan Bing?
Yes, I think so. It is one of the characteristics that I think is very, very fundamental to the country. And I think I would like to bring up the other point again. It was expedient for him not to die in Scotland and also not to have the appeal go forward. I think that was a positive thing in the long run.
What do you reckon, Angus McIndoe?
Yes, I think it's a good advert for Scottish compassion. I like the idea that that you can rise above all of the nothingness of revenge and all the sort of bad feeling.
And is there something distinctively Scottish about that?
I think there's something distinctively Scottish about that that a lot of other cultures can't understand.
I don't think people will forget. It's probably a good thing for the Scottish government to realise that when they make decisions like that, that the world is watching and listening.
Okay, I'm going to give the last word to Corky Tomasco from the New York Daily News. You're not cancelling that holiday to Edinburgh, are you?
No. I'd still go.
Okay, thank you all very much indeed. Corky Tomasco from the New York Daily News, Alessandro Bruno from the North Africa Journal, Angus McIndoe, especially for hosting us here in your restaurant in Midtown Manhattan. We also heard from Dougal Munro, President of Holland & Sherry, Professor Tom Weiss, Professor at City University New York, and Alan Bain, President of the American Scottish Foundation. Those are our final reflections from New York, from the UN General Assembly week, but no doubt the debate and discussion will continue for many weeks to come.
There we are. It's Glenn Campbell reporting from New York.